come to the church and get holy for another moment. So you live most of your life with the devil. And when you die, all you want to do is see a priest. Call the priest. I don't want to see nobody now but Reverend Jack. I'm ready. I'm ready. You tell the priest, or you tell Reverend Jackson, how much you love Jesus. And you bless your sister. And he preach your funeral and tell everybody how he see you going over. Walking on in the pearly gates. So this is a religion that encourages people to be wicked. Say, don't worry, at the last moment, just confess Christ, and that's enough. When I was in Egypt, I saw the pyramids, and I began thinking on the symbolic meaning of the pyramid in the religious world. And I decided that when I got back to Chicago, that I was going to talk on these pyramids and also on the cow, which is mentioned in the Bible as the sacred cow, the cow that the religious people were worshiping and had to gradually be weaned off of. Now, I hope that we can give you some understanding from these symbols here that will help you to understand just how this world has been formed, or just how the mind, the mentality of this world has been formed. Just what has moved, been moving in the minds of society without their knowledge. Now, you see here, that's a cow. It looks like one, too. That's a cow. Now, if you had been living in the days when they worshiped the cow, you would have been seduced, most likely, to join them in worship. See how sweet and peaceful that cow looks? They didn't only make it sweet and peaceful, they put some pretty designs on it. So it just makes you think that that should be love. Now, you know, Jesus was first portrayed as a ram, a slain ram, I believe, right? A lamb. A ram, that's right. And you know how pitiful and sweet the sheep look, don't you? This movement here was a movement to get people's hearts. Now I'm going back before Jesus to show you that it wasn't no new thing. Jacob was moving this thing for a long time. Now we have a pyramid too. Now you have a dollar, just take a look on your dollar and you'll see a pyramid on your dollar. You got a dollar bill, look on it, and you'll see a pyramid on it. And in the top of the pyramid, you'll see an eye. And from the eye, you see rays, meaning there's light symbolic of wisdom. Now, can we have that eye out there? Here it is. We have everything. We didn't leave anything out here. I think the artists have got everything here so we can work with it. Now, can you put that car out there so it won't be behind that? Pyramid here. When you look at this pyramid, you see a three-sided figure. You see a triangle, is that right? But at the base is a square. Now, why is this symbol so important in religion? And believe me, it is. It wouldn't be on your dollar if it wasn't important. I think it's the Shriners who also have the pyramid. And if you ever go to any of their circuses, you ever been to any Shriner circuses? You look at some of their art designs, and you will see most likely a pyramid. You also see swords, heads, and crescents. They resemble, in some respect, the Muslim people. Is that right? But they're Christians, and they have this pyramid. And they trace the growth of Christianity, our religion, the Bible teaching, back to Egypt, to the pyramid. Now, none of them haven't belonged to any of their orders, so they can't charge me with breaking an oath. I never gave an oath, you see. They haven't taught me not one thing, and I never gave any oath. So if I happen to reveal something here in this pyramid, don't go back and tell them I'm revealing their secrets. I don't know what they got. I only suspect, because they use this symbol, that they got the same thing that I got concerning this pyramid here. Now, we have in Christianity, we believe in God, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost in the Godhead, making up the Godhead. Now, at the base of this pyramid, you see it has four corners. That's a square. And from the square rises up the angle forming the pyramid. The angle represents human development. Human development, the human being's growth. The base represents creation. The fundamental principles in the development are in the creation. What are they? They saw creation as being composed of four fundamental or basic elements. The element of land, solid, water, air, and fire. And out of these four elements, the man develops. The man in his nature is characteristic of these elements. He's like a solid in the sense that he has to give himself the gravity of material things. He has to eat food, he has to wear clothes, he has to live in a material world. So that's the one element, there's the earth. Then there is the water. The man and his moral makeup is like water. Water can be polluted, it can be dirty, but if it keeps moving through the earth, it will filter or clean itself. It will only become filthy if it slows down to a stop and becomes stagnant. Then it will become filthy, unfit. Is that right? That's why the people in the religion are called rivers. And John the Baptist took the people to the River Jordan to clean them. He didn't take them to any pool. We take them to pools and bathtubs now. And that filth can't get out of there. John the Baptist took them to a river where the water can run and filter itself as it moves and remain clean. And that's true of the human being. If your moral body doesn't stay in motion, it's going to become sick and corrupt. People who won't think wrong, they're bringing their moral form or moral movement to a standstill. The mind will, the conscience will touch you, right? They don't do that. Now, if you respond rightly, you'll get strength to respond again. Is that right? But if you set your moral ear to your moral conscience, you'll bring your moral activity to a standstill, and the water will become stagnant and corrupt, polluted. Is that right? This is the human nature. Now, the moral nature of the human being is also like water in this sense. Water is heavy. It comes down to the earth. But it responds to the heat of the sun and rises up in the atmosphere. Likewise, the moral nature of the human being. Our moral nature would like to satisfy the appetites of our flesh. Go down. Is that right? But if the image of God is put over us, it will begin to draw our moral nature up toward the image of God. Is that right? Just as the sun with its heat draws the water in the form of fine mist up to the air and collects it as fire, and then rains it back down on earth pure. Last night or yesterday, perhaps, this water was lifted up maybe from cesspools. Is that right? But the sun draws it up in the form of a mist and lifts it from its corruption. The sun won't lift the corruption up. The sun will only lift the water up. Likewise, for the righteous image of God, it won't lift your corruption up. It won't lift your weak nature up. It won't bring your filth up to God. It'll only attract the moral nature in its pure form and lift your moral being up in a pure form toward Almighty God. And the more you begin to, the more of your moral nature that comes up, the heavier it gets. Pretty soon it gets too heavy to stay up, right? All right, what happens? It descends back to the earth in the form of rain. Is that right? This is true of human nature. A person can be weak and filthy in their moral makeup. But if they are responsive, if they respond to Almighty God, if we can appeal to them from the image of divine righteousness, keep the sun of Almighty God's truth and righteousness over them, they will gradually begin to respond to that. Their morals will gradually begin to lift up toward that. And as their morals begin to lift up, they will grow heavier in pure morals than they are in filthy morals. And when they get real heavy in pure morals, they are not satisfied to remain up. They want to give some of it back down to earth to help another filthy soul rise. Is that right? So the righteous people, they saw that in our moral makeup, we were like water. Water is heavy. It wants to soak into the earth. But if the sun shine on it, it's going to rise up in a mist and rain back down to clean the earth. Is that right? All right. So they built the pyramids because they had this knowledge, and they built the pyramids showing as a base these four elements. And in Egyptology, these elements are called the four sons of Horus. And Horus is the sun. The four sons of Horus are these elements. So Horus himself is symbolic of God manifest in the world. Do you understand? There is Horus the elder and Horus the young one. The elder is Osiris, the sun. Horus is the son of the sun. Now you have God the Father. You have Jesus, the Son of God. You have God in the scriptures pictured as a bright sun. Is that right? And Jesus being the Son of that sun. And Jesus said, I am the light of the world as long as I am in the world. Is that right? All right, so you have the same Arab language is not a new language. It's a language from ancient Egypt. Not only that, a study of ancient Egypt will reveal that circumcision didn't start with the Jews. Circumcision started with the Africans of Egypt. And the soul, the belief in the soul, death and resurrection, didn't start with Israel. It started with Egypt. Well, we can talk on this a long time, but we want to get on going. Moses was put on the river, and he was put in a basket. Is that right? And floated down the river to Egypt. Moses was a baby when he was put in that basket. Is that right? Moses didn't know nothing when he was put in that basket. Okay, who taught Moses? It was Egypt. Egypt taught Moses. So Moses here, though Moses is a prophet, Moses in this story, in this allegory, is really the Jewish people. They're telling us that they got on the river. River means that they got into the spiritual order. They got into the religious society. And it brought them to Egypt so that they would learn, get the knowledge. Now, believe it or not, see, I'm not going to argue with a fool. I'm here to help a fool. But if you want to argue with me, don't waste my time. Go on, fool. Now, let's go here. Look at the pyramid over here now, and you see an eye there. You look on your dollar, you'll see the eye there. What does that mean? It means that man is looking for vision. Human nature, there's in human nature the desire for vision. We want to see. Everybody want to see. Is that right? Not only with these physical eyes, we want to see with our soul's eyes. Is that right? So everybody want to see, and this is what pulls us. This is what makes us grow. We could die tomorrow. Well, the day is come, right? I'm not living for tomorrow, staying here tomorrow because the day is good. I'm staying here tomorrow because I want to see. Is that right? For most of us, the day is hell. And if we died today, we wouldn't miss anything. But hell, am I right or wrong? Some of you are ugly brothers. You're going back home to an ugly wife. You're going to hell. And the same thing for some of you ugly sisters. When you leave here, you're going to an ugly brother. You're going to hell. Is that right? But still, you want to live. You don't want to die. Because tomorrow, you may see something that you didn't see today. So the wise people knew that vision is what we want. We want to see. You see? So we begin from the base of the pyramid and we go up toward vision. Our body, our whole being is reaching up for vision. And what do we need for this? We need two corners of the pyramid. We don't need all the four corners. We just need two of those corners. Is that right? All right, what corners we need now? We have at the base there, we have fire. This is the fundamental building blocks of the elements that seem to pervade and preponderate or dominate in creation, you see? All right. So we need two of these in order to get vision. What is this? We need water. We need water. We will never get vision without water. Water is the beginning of movement toward vision. A man is fed to grow in knowledge. Why? Because he has to make choices. His moral nature demands, dictates that he make choices. You see a girl, and before picking her, he thinks. Is that right? You see an object that he made a drive for himself. But before picking that object for himself, he would think. He will see a step that he would like to take. The more knowledge you're going to have, the harder decision is, the more knowledge we are going to have. Is that right? So we begin realizing that we need knowledge because there's a need to make a moral decision. As little children, mama say, don't go across the street. Right? All right. Now, when we think of going across the street, we think of what the moral instruction that mama gave us, and we intend to stay on this side of the street, right? But while these desires, two instructions, are working against each other, I am growing in knowledge. Because I want to bring an end to this conflict. I want peace. So this conflict is going to force my intelligence to arrive at some kind of solution. So that I can have peace. Is that right? So it is the moral nature that stimulates the growth in the past thought intelligence. Also, over here in this corner, we have to have the physical. Now, we don't have to have fire to start with. We don't have to have air to start with. What is fire? Fire is symbolic of wisdom. We don't have to begin with wisdom. Air is symbolic of spirit. We don't have to begin with spirit. If we just have moral conscience and materials are made available, we can grow toward vision. Is that right? Some people may say, well, why do we need this moral conscience? Why can't we just start in material with knowledge? You will never come to vision. Material and knowledge will never bring you to vision without moral conscience. Moral conscience refines your knowledge. It directs your knowledge. It focuses your knowledge. Without that, your knowledge just scatters, becomes confused. You never get anywhere. Find me anybody who will become wise without having a moral force working in their being. And I'll show you somebody that's still a fool. They don't know anything. Find me one single leader who is leader over a sizable number of people who has not come to his intelligence development by the process or by the direction of moral questions in his moral makeup. And I'll show you somebody that's not a leader. In fact, he won't even have a position. Nobody can get a position of any kind of importance unless he's gone through this. This is reality. So in order for us to gain vision, brother and sister, we must have the moral development. And we must have the material there. Because man's mind is brought into life or into movement by the moral factor. And it is fed by the physical factor. Can you understand this? The moral factor brings about the movement. And the physical factor feeds the growth. A man in his moral makeup, he will have a conflict between right and wrong, good and bad, cleanliness and filth. And this conflict is going to force his intelligence to arrive at right conclusion. Is that right? But he's going to need some material knowledge if he's to grow and develop up high. The material thing is the hidden secret of creation. Is that right? But when a man studies the physical world, he learns how to master the angels. What are angels? The angels are the hidden, invisible forces in nature. These are the angels. Human beings have angels. They're hidden forces in our nature that serve great jobs in our makeup. And their hidden forces are hidden natures and forces in the physical world that perform great jobs. But as we up in the material world means are stimulated integrals by the moral factor, we learn the nature of these hidden forces. We are able to define them. And the thing that the man 2,000 years ago called a mystery, today is called an idea, a concept, or something in science. Is that right? Those things that people worshiped 1,000 years ago, or 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, as mysterious forces of angels, today are studied in the field of science. Is that right? Well, they felt that the wind was an angel. Many of them thought that the heat was an angel, that disease germs were angels, angels of death and angels of life. But as the man's mind grew in knowledge, he began to identify the name, the form, and nature, and gave names to those things. Is that right? And the books say that God gave Adam the power to name the things. Is that right? And Adam gave names to the angels. Is that right? The Holy Quran says that Allah said to Adam, tell them their names. And Adam told the angels their names. And when he told the angels their names, all the angels bowed down to Adam. Because God had intended that man should be over angels. Is that right? And he said, I'm going to create in the earth a ruler, a custodian, a vice general. I shall put in the earth a ruler, someone who will be able to master the physical creation. And when I do so, fall down, you angels, and make obeisance to him. Is that right? But what is this? This is an allegory. This is a story. You have to understand the pictures, the images, the figures in this story. The angels there are not some supernatural beings. The angels there are nothing but the powers and forces in creation. But the human being, because he's given the power of intelligence, the power of reasoning, he can study creation and identify the hidden forces in creation. But until he does that, he is ruled by these angels. The primitive man in the jungle, or the man in ancient civilization, he perhaps feared the thunder and thought that there was a living God in it. Is that right? He perhaps feared the wind, thought that there was a living God in it. Feared the snake, feared the river. But when man studied in time, and studied and learned how to identify these hidden invisible forces working in creation, then he became the ruler of the angels that he yesterday worshipped as God. Is that right? All right. Now let's see here. We move up to Jesus. And what is God? God is the all-knowing one. God sees all. Is that right? He comprehends grasps everything in his vision, so the book says. And man would like to see Jesus with the eye of God. Now he shall never see with the eye of God. How can that is not absolute contain the absolute? That's just like saying I can put the whole creation in a hat. The Jesus was too big to put in a man's hat. Is that right? So if the mind, if the human mind can expand big enough to grasp or to take into itself the whole creation, then that mind won't be human anymore. It will be God. Is that right? Yes, it will be God. No mind can conceive of everything. You're creation, not creator. All right, now let's go over here to the cow and see what's there. But before leaving, let's compare this with the Trinity, or compare this with the Trinity. God the Father is called creation force. Creation force is the power in the physical to generate life. That's called reproduction. This is the creating force. But this power is expressed in water
we're going to have to get a new form of new development. He's going to have to give himself to the God and commit himself completely. And when he does that, then he will truly become free. And Jesus said, the truth shall make you free. Not free. You can't become free just having faith. Faith will start you in the path toward free. That is the beginning of the movement. You have to first have some faith that there exists truth in order to move in the path toward truth. But faith alone will never make you free. Truth and truth alone will make you free. He said, know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Now, how many of us are big enough to embrace truth? Most of us are too small to embrace truth. We don't want to see truth, because truth is a light that shines everywhere. And we don't want some of the dark waters of our own minds to be thrown up. We want the vision, but we don't want truth. And to get the vision, you have to bow, commit wholeheartedly to truth. Now let's go over here and look at that crowd. Over there on the crowd, you see a pattern there. A pattern of four truth. And in the pyramid, you see four and you see three. Is that correct? Over there in the cow, they put them together. If you go to Egypt right now, you can go to the Museum of Cairo, and you can see that very same cow. You're in the museum. And you can see the very same pattern on that cow. The etchings, the drawing, is still, they haven't faded away, they're still there. Now, in the Bible, we read that while Moses was up in the mountain, Aaron lost control of the people, and they went and built, formed a golden calf. Is that right? And they said, this is the God that brought us up out of Egypt. In other words, we don't have to wait on Moses talking to some mysterious God up there that we don't know nothing about. We've been following this man because we want some land. We want a country of our own. Now he's up there in the mountain trying to get some revelation from some God that we don't know. We tired of waiting. We got a God that we know that brought us up out of Egypt. So get all this golden knowledge together and let's melt it down and form it into the calf again. So they made a golden calf. A body of knowledge. All right. So here's how the symbolic of society of the world. A nation that sees the world as a cow is a tyrannical nation, a bloodsucker nation. Anybody who will see the world as a cow is a bloodsucker, a slave master. Who would think of society as a cow? Something that you milk and keep in a corral in a pasture. Who thought it in? Ancient Egypt and the Jacobites. But the Jacob people, that is Israel, that the Jews before they reformed and became Israel, and those that are still yet Jacob and haven't reformed, they took this knowledge from the Egyptians. And then we had to design, took out all those designs, and gave it a new image. Same old concept, but a new image. And they call it the cow without spot or blemish, or the cow with no defect, no marking. It is in the chapter of the Holy Quran called the cow. It is
is also in the Bible if you have read it or understand it. But here you find that the world is perceived as a cow. The head of the cow in the Egyptian mythology or in Egyptian religion has in between its horns a sun disk. And in a sun disk existing between the horns means that the knowledge, the power, the light is here. That was the head of the animal. The leaders, the wise leaders, they represent the sun. They're not in the body. They're over the head of the cow. Do you understand? Ruling in the head of the cow, ruling the society. And here you have the teeth of the cow. And that milk there is really for cows. Is that right? So human beings drink that milk, right? All right. The knowledge is not for human beings that come out of this cow, out of this society. It's designed to produce the likeness of this society, which is another cow. Follow my language now. But people who grab this knowledge with ignorance of it start thinking that they should drink the milk of this cow. When the milk wasn't meant for men, this milk is not for the men. This milk is for the babies, for the children. It's for those weak members of the world who will drink this milk and allow us to form their society in the order of our image, our design for the world. You understand? All right. Now, you have the Jewish people right today. They don't believe in eating the hide of the cow. If they are not going to eat the hind of the cow, who's going to eat it? Are they going to throw away all that meat? No, they sell it to the Gentiles. Is that right? They sell the rump, the rectum, to the Gentiles. And they eat the front. That is close to the head. Now, when you look at the cow, you see four legs there. The four legs there represent those four fundamental elements: land, water, air, and fire. The society stands in that. And it's developed out of that. And in the form of society are working these four elements. But also in society are working the three fundamental elements that brings about the full the maturity of a human being. For a human being must be a sense body, a living sense body, in his physical body. Then, the five senses, that is, then he also must be a living moral body. Is that right? And this brings him to become an intelligent body. Is that right? So we have this too in this society. And they're all mixed up. Okay, now the leadership didn't get down and involved in this. The leadership didn't get caught up or hung up in this three-stage concept. We shouldn't get hung up in this four-stage concept. We should master it. We should control it. We should have knowledge of it and use it to control the subject of the master. Do you understand? He should supply society with all of his needs. But he should choose what part of that society that he would take into himself. He can eat the forefront of the animal, but don't eat the hind of the animal, because the hind carries the weight, the corruption, the filth. Give the corruption, give the filth to the Gentiles. And you eat that is not contaminated. And don't even eat that without soaking it in salt. Because we have put a little poison in the whole society. To the ignorant quarters of the society and eat that dung that we have there for their needs. And don't even go to the higher quarters of the society and eat what we put there for them to eat unless you first soak it in salt. It means first put it under the debt of Jewish law. And if it doesn't stand the test of Jewish law, throw it out. Take out the impurity with the Jewish people before you take it into yourself. This is a Jacobite people. You mean to tell me the Jew is that diabolic? That wicked and that wise? No, not the Jew as you know the Jew, but the Jacobite. Yaqub, yes, he's yet wise. And he's still that wise, although he's lost much of the knowledge that his forefathers had. He's still too wise to eat the hind of society. He lets you and the Gentiles eat the hind of the society. And he won't drink the milk of society. That milk means the moral teachings of the society. You won't take the moral teachings of the society. He goes to his body of knowledge for his moral teachings. But you Gentiles and you Christians, so-called Negroes who live under the rule of the Gentiles, you eat whatever moral teachings there is in the society. You go to Detroit, they got a different moral teachings, a moral habit, you just fall right in line with it. Wherever the city is available, you then struck it without question.